But I'm not impressed by your performance.
Two legs, two arms, normal.
And he threw a big pity party for himself, crying on camera and shit.
They're selling you all wolf tickets, people. You're eating them right up.
No, forget Jesus, people.
I was just like, I need to have his babies. I need to stay alive.
I have a huge cock, Joe.
Too big?
Too big.
I think a black belt under the Nogueira brothers is saying I got a free toy in my Happy Meal.
Like, this is home.
Team House, taste my PPP, okay?
Are you guys, you better not fool me. I want my up. You.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Hello and welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. I am your host, Matt Grady, riding solo this week. Michael Coughlin is figuratively tied up at the Yale Writers Conference. He will likely be back next week, sometime soon, I am sure. This week will mostly just be MMA news. We won't get into the stuff, so let's get right to it, shall we? This past weekend, we had UFC 212 live from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. In the main event, we had Max Holloway defeating Jose Aldo by TKO at 4:13 of the third round. I think this fight will be remembered for a couple things, but first, sort of a changing of the guard. You've got the 25-year-old Holloway being, you know, the next generation of featherweight fighters, defeating the 30-year-old Aldo, who's been the kingpin of the division the last, you know, literally eight or nine years, started coming from WEC. Holloway looked great. He probably lost the first round, but Aldo started to get a little tired. Holloway gained confidence as the fight progressed, and then he rocked Aldo in the third with a couple good punches, then finished him with ground and pound on the mat. Some people thought it was an early stoppage. I really didn't. At that point, it was pretty much inevitable that Holloway was going to win the fight. Aldo looked tired and rocked and didn't appear like there was any way he was going to come back. So big win for Holloway. It looks like Frankie Edgar's probably next in line for him, although he'd probably much prefer a Conor McGregor fight. He's hoping to get a fight in Hawaii. He's been pushing for that for years. So maybe in a few months we'll get Frankie Edgar versus Max Holloway in, I don't know, Aloha Stadium, where they play the Pro Bowl maybe. Who knows? But time will tell on that one. But my other takeaway is, how good was Conor McGregor at 145 pounds? Knocks out Aldo in 13 seconds. Also has the win over Holloway, where he really just out-wrestled him, won all three rounds on a bum knee where he had a torn ACL. McGregor is really, really good at 145 pounds. He usually has a size and reach advantage, but he's got the two wins over the two best featherweights of the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, Holloway's on an 11-win streak? He's won 11 in a row, which is crazy in the UFC. That never happens nowadays. And it's not against scrubs either. I mean, he's obviously got the Aldo win, but he's also got wins over Pettis, Lamas, Jeremy Stephens, Charles Oliveira, Cub Swanson, Cole Miller, Andre Feely, good high-level UFC fighters. So Holloway is clearly the real deal. He's young. A fight with Edgar's interesting because we don't know how good Holloway's takedown defense is, really. He's won most of these fights standing. Can Edgar take him down like he did to Yair? Probably not as easily, but it would definitely be a challenge for Holloway and really determine if he's truly one of the greatest featherweights of all time. Beneath that, we had Claudia Gadela defeating Karolina Kowalkiewicz by rear naked choke at 3:03 of the first. Good win for Gadela. She's still probably another fight away from another title shot against Joanna. It looks like Rose Namajunas will get the next title shot against Joanna. But a good win, dominant victory, took Kowalkiewicz down, choked her out pretty easily. So Gadela did what she needed to, but it's like with two losses to Joanna, it's going to be tough to get her back in the title mix. Prior to that, we had the 40-year-old Vitor Belfort defeating Nate Marquardt by unanimous decision, 29-28 on all three scorecards. Belfort didn't look particularly good. I actually scored the fight for Marquardt, 29-28. Belfort had one good flurry in the second round that I felt won him that round. But the first and third, he didn't do much. He was kind of listless and inactive and real tentative. He was actually training in Montreal at TriStar for this fight, and that's, I don't know, you want to say one of their hallmarks, but they've been known to get guys to slow down, fight more tactical, smarter, that sort of thing. So, I mean, prior to the fight, Belfort said he was planning on retiring. Now he's saying he has one more fight in the UFC that he'd like to take, and then has four or five more fights in him after this. After watching the Marquardt fight, I don't think he has five more fights in him, especially at the UFC level. Maybe he finishes up his UFC career, fights that one more fight somewhere in Brazil, and then goes to Bellator and can fight some older guys, some hand-picked opponents over there that might make sense, you know. Maybe Sonnen or Wanderlei, maybe Tito comes back. I don't know, guys like that, but there's not much left for him in UFC. You just can't compete at that high level anymore. Other fights to note on the undercard, we had Rafael Assuncao defeating Marlon Moraes by split decision. Close fight. Obviously not the debut from WSOF that Moraes was looking for. We also had a good grappling battle between Antonio Carlos Jr. and Eric Spicely. I definitely recommend checking that fight out if you haven't seen it on the Fox Sports 1 Underground. A lot of great mat work, some 50-50 guards, stuff you don't normally see in MMA, more in sports jiu-jitsu, but definitely worth checking out. I wish Mike was here a little bit to talk about that fight, but alas, he is not. Bonus awards were Fight of the Night going to Max Holloway versus Jose Aldo, and Performance of the Night was Claudia Gadela and Brian Kelleher. Kelleher actually won in an upset on the opener on the FS1 card, defeating Yuri Alcantara. He won at 148 with a guillotine. Moving to other news, Katsushi Sakuraba is going into the UFC Hall of Fame this summer in July. He will... I want to say it's like July 6th, but I might just be making that up. Either way, Sakuraba, obviously a legendary fighter, spent most of his career in Pride, also did some pro wrestling, was in UFC for a short while as well, had a few fights in the UFC, but he's mostly known as a guy in Pride who was smaller, but had good striking, good wrestling, good jiu-jitsu, and had a history of just fighting guys much, much bigger than him and having more heart than he should have. Obviously also known as the Gracie Killer, Gracie Hunter, I'm sorry. He also killed several Gracies as well in the ring. But, you know, he's got the wins over Hoist and Hoyler and Henzo. But then as he progressed in his career, he started fighting bigger and bigger guys. He fought Wanderlei Silva twice, Quentin Jackson, Crow Cop, Kevin Randleman, Little Nog, Ken Shamrock, just guys that were bigger, that in the U.S. those fights never even would have been sanctioned, and he ended up taking a beating, and at the end of his career, it got pretty sad, but definitely a lot of heart, and a guy who was competitive against bigger guys when he really shouldn't have been. So no qualms for me for Sakuraba going into the Hall of Fame. Definitely makes sense. A deserving guy and truly a legend in MMA. The biggest news story in MMA this week actually revolves around one of its smallest fighters. Current UFC flyweight champ Demetrius Johnson went public with his gripes this week. This is obviously on the heels of guys like Aya Quinta and Rockhold, Nate Diaz complaining about their pay, their treatment, but I really think DJ took it to another level where he delved into more of the inner workings of contract negotiations. So I'm going to briefly go over this because there's a lot of nuance and detail to this thing that we probably aren't going to really get to go in today. So essentially, he put his thoughts out to paper and also gave further details on his struggles with UFC management on the MMA Hour this week. He was initially looking to defend his title against Sergio Pettis because he felt that Pettis was deserving and the biggest name in the division. If he couldn't get that, he was also willing to fight Cody Garbrandt, who was saying he could get down to 125. Because Garbrandt was the champ at one is the champ at 135, and it would be a money drawing fight. UFC management wanted him to fight Ray Borg instead, who he felt was a lesser name, but at least was a 125-pound fighter and in his division. So after some negotiating over pay-per-view points and Sean Shelby, the UFC matchmaker, telling him that smaller fighters don't draw, Johnson agreed to the Borg fight and signed a bout agreement for that fight. Then, you know, a week or two later, Cody Garbrandt pulls out of his bantamweight title fight against TJ Dillashaw. Garbrandt had the bad back and had to pull out. So Dillashaw immediately called out Johnson, despite never having fought at 125 or being a huge name himself. But Dillashaw said he could make 125, would cut the weight, get down, and win the flyweight title. UFC liked this idea and pushed it on Johnson and wanted him to take the Dillashaw fight instead of the Borg fight. Johnson felt that Dillashaw should have to make weight at 125 first and win a fight in the division to get a title shot against him. Which, I mean, there's some argument there. I don't think it's the strongest, but Johnson continued arguing with UFC management and said he would take the fight with Dillashaw if under certain conditions. Basically, if Dillashaw could not make the weight, Johnson would get his full purse and Dillashaw's purse, and the fight would be canceled. In other words, DJ wouldn't have to fight Dillashaw if he weighed in at 130 pounds. The fight would just be canceled. It would be off. And that was a stipulation Johnson wanted in his contract and his bout agreement to fight Dillashaw. So there's that aspect of it. And then the UFC responded by saying, and again, this is all Johnson's claims. The UFC hasn't spoken publicly on this, but Johnson claims the UFC said they would keep Ray Borg on the card and he would be ready to fight as a last-minute opponent if Dillashaw missed weight. Johnson refused this, questioning UFC's understanding of how fighters prepare for a fight and saying, am I preparing for Dillashaw or am I preparing for Borg? Well, this is unprofessional and amateurish. Dana White then got in touch with Johnson and threatened to shut down the entire flyweight division if Johnson would not take the Dillashaw fight. Johnson still refused to take the fight against Dillashaw and told Dana to shut the fucking division down. The next day in the press, Dana called Johnson insane and said he would fight Dillashaw to pressure Johnson into taking the fight. At this time, Johnson is still refusing, and this has really been the big news in MMA this week. Granted, DJ's not in the press a lot, and he's always got the rep for being a company guy, but apparently he's fed up with the UFC and how management negotiates fights. I guess he's never gotten pay-per-view points, and I mean, all of that sounds good and well, but the fact of the matter is, he's still not really a draw. He doesn't make the company a ton of money, he doesn't do great ratings, he doesn't get pay-per-view buys, and he would claim that he's not promoted well, which granted, he's not promoted like Conor McGregor or Jon Jones. But at the same time, he's not the most engaging personality. So it's a weird situation. I can see both sides of the argument. Johnson wants more money and wants to fight, you know, certain guys. And a lot of fighters feel that way. So it's not unusual. At the same time, in the UFC's defense, Johnson's never been a draw, and they have given him some opportunities. He's main evented a bunch of Fox cards. He's main evented some pay-per-views. And it's like they've promoted those fights. Granted, they're not blockbusters, but to say he's not promoted at all isn't really accurate either. His request to get all of Dillashaw's purse if he misses weight, is unusual and something they've never really done. So I get it. I get both sides of the debate here. I think most fans and writers, reporters, that sort of thing are siding with Johnson because they like him personally because he's a good guy, he's friendly, whatever. But I can see both sides. How this pans out, we don't know. UFC could be on a bit of a slippery slope if they agree to his demands because it's going to encourage other fighters to go public with how negotiations go and take it to that level. And if Johnson gets his way, they're giving in to him and basically saying, okay, if you bitch and moan to the press and tell how we negotiate and how things go, we'll acquiesce to you. And more guys will probably start doing that as a result. So in a way, UFC kind of has to draw a line in the sand here and say, no, this is what we're doing, take it or leave it. Do I see him shutting down the flyweight division if Demetrius Johnson doesn't take a certain fight? No, that seems absurd. And I think if they did it, the backlash would be pretty wild. But time will tell. Usually cooler heads prevail in this sort of thing. Again, I look at it like the loss of Joe Silva and some of the upper management when WME IMG took over could be part of this issue. It's just not the same group of guys running the show anymore. And it's newer people, less experienced people. They don't have the relationships that they used to have with fighters. So it's a bit of a mess. Where it goes, no one really knows, but we will definitely keep you up to date and let you know next week what's going on there. Changing gears here, the Las Vegas Review put out a story this week about Dana White buying three mansions in, I mean, what looks like a swanky Vegas golf community this week. Essentially bought all three of these houses over the last few months since he got that $300 million payday from the WME buyout. But at the same time, he actually owned a fourth home in this neighborhood adjacent to these other three he just purchased that he bought from, I want to say, Frank Fertitta back in 06. All of these houses are in the like $2 million, $2.5 million range. And White's actually started tearing a couple of the houses down. It appears he's going to build like one, I don't want to say one giant mega mansion, but he's going to tear down these multi-million dollar homes, three or four of them, rebuild and start from scratch. And when you have $300 million, you can do that. It's probably not that big a deal for him. But like these are like I looked at some of these houses on Zillow, and it's like the shittiest of the four houses is nicer than any house I've been in my life. So it's pretty foreign to your average American, and at a time when you've got your flyweight champion with 10 straight title defenses looking to break the all-time record, complaining about pay and how he's treated, it wasn't the best timing for this story about Dana White's mega mansion being built in a private gated golf community in Las Vegas. The timing for White probably couldn't have been worse, but that's how life goes. I don't know. I don't have a problem with White making what he makes. I really don't. That's how capitalism works. I get the fighters' gripes, though, when they're getting paid, you know, 10-10 for a win in the UFC, and they're having trouble paying their coaches and putting food on the table, and they see Dana White tearing down multi-million dollar mansions to build a bigger one. So perception's reality, and it's not the best look for Dana right now, although I don't fault him for it at all. In other news, War Machine, John Copenhaver, if you remember him, former UFC fighter, former Bellator fighter, pretty much a maniac, though, all around. He was sentenced to life in prison. After 36 years, he has the possibility of parole. He was convicted of sexually assaulting and kidnapping his girlfriend, Christy Mack. Scary story, not pleasant. If you want to read up on it, you can, but he really beat the crap out of her and I think beat up some guy she was with at the same time. This happened a year or two ago, but he was finally sentenced on Monday. So he's going to be in prison for a long time, which is really probably where he belongs. Probably needs some mental help too, which maybe he can get in prison. I don't really spend much time in prison, so it's hard for me to say. But either way, War Machine John Copenhaver's going to be out of the news for a while, you would think, because he's going to be in prison. Chuck Liddell posted a pic of himself and Tito Ortiz like doing a face-off this week with the caption, "Why not?" Typed up underneath it. This got a lot of people talking about a fight between the two in Bellator. Obviously, Liddell is no longer working for the UFC, and he put a picture up about a month ago where he looked pretty ripped and in shape and looking to get back into fighting. To the why not question, Ortiz replied to it on Twitter by saying he didn't need the money, but that he could lend Liddell some cash if he needed it. Basically saying he wasn't interested in fighting Liddell. He's in good shape money-wise. Liddell responded that the media requested that he and Ortiz take the picture and that Ortiz still has no class and was the same piece of shit that he had punked on numerous occasions. Obviously, Ortiz and Liddell have a long simmering feud. Liddell won that big fight that really, I want to say put UFC on the map, but really turned the corner for their business. They did over $1 million buys for that first Ortiz and Liddell fight. That fight would still draw, man. If they did that fight in Bellator, whether on TV or pay-per-view, people would still watch. There's still that legend of Liddell that never seems to go away. I don't know if it's the mohawk, the tattoo on the head, or what, but people remember him as an animal no matter how many times it was he got knocked out. Do I want to see it? No. Would I watch it if it was on? Yes. Same story as always there. In other news, fight news, it looks like Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko will rematch for the heavyweight title in boxing. Also, Jason Knight is going to face Ricardo Lamas. I think, is it Duho Choi? Might have been Duho Choi's out with an injury, I think. Don't quote me on that. I'm doing most of the show off the top of my head, which isn't my specialty. This weekend, we've got UFC Fight Night, Lewis vs. Hunt from Auckland, New Zealand at the Spark Arena on June 11th, which is a Sunday. So there's going to be a weird time issue with this show because it's in New Zealand. I'm trying to see when it starts here in the States, but I don't have that information handy because I am unprofessional. Anyway, in the event, we've got a heavyweight fight with Derek Lewis versus Mark Hunt. Big fight for Lewis, obviously. You know, he's coming off the win against Travis Brown. He's gaining a bit of a follower. He's got a unique charisma that I find very entertaining. Great Instagram account. I suggest you check it out. Just ridiculous videos on Instagram, funny clips. And he's fighting Hunt, who's still disgruntled and pissed at the UFC. He's complaining about his last fight with Overeem and Overeem getting that IV due to food poisoning. Hunt thinks it's because he was taking steroids. So Hunt's still complaining, unhappy, still has the lawsuit out against the UFC. Lewis has looked good lately. I don't think he's like an elite heavyweight, but in a division where the guys are all pushing 40s, with a win here, he's in the mix. I would think he'd need one more win after Hunt to get a title shot, but with his post-fight interviews and the social media stuff, Lewis has something. I don't think he's a well-rounded elite heavyweight by any stretch. I think your Canes and Verdums and, you know, Miocic's beat him relatively handily. But I give him a shot against Hunt, who's older and has not been on a particularly good run as of late in the UFC. I mean, Hunt is coming off the Overeem loss. He got his head pounded in by Brock Lesnar. He's been knocked out by Miocic, Verdum, Dos Santos. His last two wins are against Mir and Bigfoot. So, again, like, he's got a couple wins mixed in there, but it's not against really good guys. For Lewis, this is a huge fight. It's a main event. He gets a win here. He's in the mix for a title shot at heavyweight, really. Right now, he's ranked sixth in the heavyweight rankings. You beat Hunt, you're up another notch. And right now, he's won six in a row in the UFC. So he's on a good run. It'll be interesting to see if he can beat Hunt, because obviously this fight's going to be standing. And Hunt's dangerous. He can knock anybody out with one shot. And he could easily take Lewis down. He's a more experienced striker. Land that big shot, win by knockout, and walk off. That's totally plausible. At this point, I think Lewis is going to be quicker on the feet. It's just a matter of if Hunt can land that one big shot. Lewis hits hard, too. This fight is likely not going five rounds by any stretch. Somebody's going to win by knockout, if I had to predict. It's just a question of, is Lewis going to be able to do it by, like, accumulation, landing enough shots, tiring Hunt out? Or will Hunt land that one big shot to take it? I'm going to vote for Derek Lewis just because I like his Instagram. In the semi-main event, this is definitely not a co-main. Derek Brunson is facing Dan Kelly. If you remember Judo Dan, he is an older guy. He's 39 years old and is actually in the UFC middleweight rankings at number 15 as we speak right now. He's won four in a row in the UFC, all against lower-level guys, except Rashad Evans. He had a split-decision win over Rashad in Rashad's debut at middleweight at UFC 209 in Vegas. Again, Dan Kelly, he was in the 2000, 04, 08, and 2012 Summer Olympics for judo. His best showing was seventh place in 04. So he's an accomplished judo guy, but he's older and looks slow, but is tough as hell. I like his fights. I find him entertaining. He's got the dad bod going on. And he's fighting Derek Brunson, who you think would probably light him up on the feet, but you would have thought Rashad would light him up on the feet too. So it'll be interesting. I favor Brunson. He's coming off that unanimous decision loss to Anderson Silva that a lot of people scored for Brunson, but he was super tentative in that fight. Prior to that, he had some good wins over Sam Alvey, Ed Herman, Lorenz Larkin, and Uriah Hall. So Brunson's no joke, and he'd have to be the favorite in this fight. But Judo Dan, you never know with that guy. He's got some heart. Rest of the undercard, not a lot of big names. You've got Dan Hooker versus Ross Pearson, Tim Elliott versus Ben Wynn, John Moraga, former flyweight number one contender on the prelim card. Other than that, mostly guys you've never heard of. But a fun show. I mean, as far as the main event goes, that's a fight you'll probably want to see. It should be action, and somebody's getting knocked the hell out in that one, if I had to guess. What else is going on in the world of MMA? I don't think a whole heck of a lot. I think we're almost at 30 minutes now anyway, so I feel like I've done my duty. We have kept the streak alive. I got to get my daughter to gymnastics and make dinner here. So, I mean, it's possible more news broke in the last little bit, but as far as I know, I think those are the big stories. I mean, what I'll be watching out for is how the whole Demetrius Johnson thing pans out. Is UFC going to cave to him and give to his demands and kind of set a precedent? Or are they going to draw a line in the sand and say no, you're going to fight Dillashaw, you're not fighting anybody, which I guess they can do, but I don't know. It's a weird situation, especially considering Johnson's rep in the business for being easy to deal with and a good guy. He just seems like he feels like he's been taken advantage of. And again, I blame a lot of that on the loss of Joe Silva and, you know, letting go so much of the office staff and the upper management. They're just missing that connection with the fighters. So that story continues to play out, and that's probably going to be the bigger story of the year, is how WME IMG manages to relate to the fighters and smooth some of this stuff over. Again, there's still no union. That MMA AAA has just vanished. You hear nothing about that. You know, Bjorn Rebney and GSP and Kane and Dillashaw and Cerrone, those guys came out with a storm and have vanished since then, and the union thing is not going anywhere despite all these fighters being disgruntled. It's like, to me, it's an inevitable thing, but when it finally happens, who the heck knows? But even this fight this weekend, you got Mark Hunt, who's suing the company, fighting in the main event. You just look at all these cards and all these fighters. Anderson Silva retires because he doesn't get the fight he wants. I don't remember a time in UFC history where there's been this much discontent, and a lot of it's going to be for that $4 billion sale. Fighters realize, geez, we've been getting hosed all this time. And also just the change in culture within the office and the management there. They don't have the same relationships they used to when you have a bunch of brand new matchmakers. You get rid of Joe Silva. Things are going to be different, and the fighters are showing that, and they're voicing their concerns. And the more guys do it, the more contagious it gets, and there seems to be not a lot of repercussions for doing it. So it's an interesting time for, you know, the fighters versus the management and how they get paid and their benefits and how they're treated. This is a very interesting time for the UFC and the MMA in general. There might not be a lot of huge fights. There's no million buy shows on the horizon. But behind the scenes, if you're an MMA fan, this time in MMA history is, I don't want to say super pivotal, but to a degree it is, because you can feel a change in the tides coming here. Which way it'll go, I don't know. Will guys jump ship when their contracts are up and go to Bellator? Maybe. UFC's pissing a lot of guys off right now. So it could be interesting, or they'll just throw guys an extra $100,000 to shut them up and keep them on board. And I mean, that's how they've normally done business. But if money's tight, they might say, screw it, the UFC brand name's more valuable than any fighter. We don't need Demetrius Johnson. We'll run with Ray Borg versus Sergio Pettis, and they can just take the spot of Johnson, who's not a big draw anyway. That very well could happen. In the MMA bubble, it'll have repercussions. The bigger casual fan base, most of them don't even know who DJ is anyway, so it's interesting. It's interesting, and it's a story to look at in the next, you know, 6 months, year, anyway. So, anywho, thank you for listening to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt Grady. Check us out on Twitter at HalfGuarded, Matt F. Grady on Twitter, and hopefully Mike will be back next week. He sounds like he's having a good time at Yale, maybe learning some stuff and making a friend or two. So thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.